Well, good afternoon. Welcome to our next set of classes. This is lecture three in a four-track series of lectures on restoration history. We started yesterday with our two women historians, Dr. Loretta Honeycutt, who teaches history here. Lori did Alexander Campbell's wife, Selena Campbell. And the second lecture was by Bonnie Miller, who's a Pepperdine graduate, who's with us today. And she did Sarah Andrews, who gave her life to Japan. Now, this is lecture three in the series, and John Wilson is going to speak to us now on When Faith Goes to College. This is the history, the beginnings of campus ministry and Churches of Christ. So I think we're starting probably in the decade of the 1960s. I haven't seen where John's going with this. But I can't think of anybody that would be better positioned to know what was happening in the 60s. He was so involved in campus ministry. And the stories we're about to hear, the reflections we're about to hear, are from somebody who was there and knows whereof he speaks. And, of course, campus ministry is still very popular in Churches of Christ. We have so many around the country. So we're starting here in 2015. We know where we are now. We're going back to the beginnings of this movement, probably in the decade of the 1960s. John Wilson was our dean here for 14 years. He's retired. He lives on the campus, attends the University Church. Will you welcome Dr. John Wilson to be our lecturer?
Thank you, Jerry. They asked me how much stuff I wanted to hook up and so on. I said, I'm going to go primitive. I'm just actually going to stand here and talk. I hope you can stand the shock of not having any technological stuff. And what I want to do, actually, campus ministry or ministering to students on non-Christian college campuses has a very long history in Churches of Christ and in the Restoration Movement. You can trace back into the 1890s. We were doing some things on campuses. But I'm going to only go back 56 years because that's where I got into this. And I'll actually go back to the 20th of September in the year 1959. I grew up in Springfield, Missouri, and pardon the autobiographical first part of this, but I was actually sort of there when these things happened, so I'm going to talk about them from the point of view of what I saw. And I was asked to come to the South National Church to be what I guess today they'd call youth minister and worship leader or worship minister. I don't know what we called it at that time, but that's what I was doing. But many years before, people in the various churches in the area in southwest Missouri had said Springfield needs to have four churches. We'll have one in each quarter of the town. I thought that was an interesting bit of cooperative planning that they had done. And the one in the southeastern quarter of the city would be next to the university, which was just a little teacher's college at the time. So they purposely built a building and started a congregation across the street from what now is the Missouri State University, a very large university. So the idea from the beginning was somehow to reach out to and minister to the students who were there. Well, anyway, those were certainly the days, especially in southwest Missouri, where elders didn't do anything new unless they had a verse. You had to have a verse. And I remember they asked Dr. Steve Eckstein. I don't know if you know that name. Dr. Eckstein was very important in the development of reaching students, particularly on state university campuses. And he was out at East New Mexico University. He already had, you could take graduate degrees from, mostly from teachers who were from Churches of Christ and a few others as well. And it was quite an interesting thing. So the elders at the South National Church said, we'll get Dr. Eckstein to come and see if he's got a verse so we can know that we're being biblical in what we do. Well, he came on a Wednesday night. I actually was not there yet. I came a few weeks after this. So he told them the great need that we had, how many students in the first place we had from Churches of Christ who were not going to colleges affiliated with Churches of Christ, that there were a lot more in the state universities than there were in the Christian colleges, and that we had some responsibility to them and so on. And he made all of those points, but where he really made the the crucial point was, he said, now in Acts chapter 19 and verse 9, it says, and Paul taught daily in the school of Tyrannus. So he said, if you can get somebody here teaching the Bible daily in this school, you'll be doing just what the Apostle Paul did. And they said, that's it. We never had any problem after that about what we were doing. Everybody was sure it was the right thing to do. Well, I came in and they told me, now we want to do this. We don't know how to do it. We don't really know. We thought that was really good what Dr. Eckstein said, but so you do that. That was about my training for this area. So we started. I remember the first meeting we ever had for the campus ministry there. We had seven students we gathered together. We met in the foyer of the South National Church, and we met around a little space heater because they weren't sure it was worth actually heating up the building yet. Going to wait and see whether it would work or not. So we had a little space heater. And that's what we started to build with. And those students really didn't know what we were going to do either. But we did know this, that there was already a pattern that Dr. Eckstein and others had followed to get one of the Christian colleges to accredit courses that we would teach. And then the state universities were willing to transfer that credit in as units toward graduation. It was a wonderful opportunity. And in Texas and Oklahoma and some other places, these were popping up all over the place. We called them chairs of Bible or Bible chairs. That's an old term in higher education, a chair of this or a chair of that. So it would be a chair of Bible. And it would be, since they felt it would be illegal for the state universities to offer credit for Bible courses, what you would do is you would take it from a church-related school, and then the state university would accept the credit. It was a way to kind of get around that problem. We had a state attorney general in Missouri who had said, you can't offer the courses directly, but you can do this. So I was a fairly newly minted graduate of Harding, and so I called Dr. Joe, the dean there, and I said, we've got this opportunity. Would you all be willing to accredit courses I teach here, and then state university will accept that? And he said, sure, we'll be willing to do that. So we, about around 1961, we got all the sort of ducks in a row, and around 1961 we started doing that. A lot of others, we were not the first by any means. There were many others already doing that. I will never forget the meeting. I don't really have a lot of time today. I'd love to tell you the story about my meeting with the college president, which was great, but we'll leave that for another time. And in those days, college presidents could just decide things. They didn't have to talk to anybody. I said, we'd like to have transfer credit, and we'd like to do this. And he said, wait a minute. And he got a piece of paper out, and he said, have your own classrooms. They can't be in a church building. You have to have at least a master's degree. There you are. Go ahead. That's the way you did academic programs in those days. I loved it, especially when I was a dean. Hate to do what you have to do nowadays. But anyway, that's the way we started. So we had the credit courses. Then we started an organization. We called it Epsilon Chi. That's the Greek letters for in Christ, because we knew we needed to have some way for the students to have a sense of belonging that fit into the way universities did things. And, of course, we had those Greek organizations and so on. The church bought us an old house that was close to the campus, and we called it the Slattery House, and we had that to use because the university said, can't offer it in the church building, can't offer your courses in the church building. So what we call the Christian Student Center opened, and again, I'm reflecting something that was happening all over the place in the very late 50s and into the 60s. Dozens and dozens and dozens of congregations were doing what we were doing. We started out with about, soon we had about 80 students taking credit classes. Now, in the meantime, all of these places, the campus ministries that were starting all over the country, or Bible chairs as we were calling them, they all had a director, a Bible chair director, and those people would get together once a year for this is a meeting that still exists. It's not just the Pepperdine lectures and ACU lectures and so on that had been around a long time. That National Campus Minister Seminar, as it's called now, has been around 57, 58 years. And so one of our elders and we all got in the car and drove to Texas, I think it was, and to get acquainted and to see what other people were doing and so on. We're getting now up into the mid-60s. And around 66 or 67, we went to a meeting in Levelland, Texas, and some fellows showed up there. One was named Bill Banowski. One was named Jim Beavis. There were three or four others, and they had a new idea. And they'd gotten the sponsorship of the Broadway Church in Lubbock, and there were two or three things with them that were different from us. One thing, they had money. They'd gotten a grant or whatever. And another one was that the BioChair movement was very dependent on the local churches that sponsored it. And we had to learn right away that if you move too far ahead of what the local church is comfortable with, you can look around and they're gone. And so it was very important because we had in mind, the BioChair directors had in mind some ways the church needed to change and grow, but we didn't talk a lot about that because we felt it was our responsibility there needed to be a little give and take, and if we wanted the local churches to start thinking about things differently, we were going to have to at least adjust to get so we could all get along. And that was always the spirit of the BioChair movement, is to be careful about not moving too far ahead of your constituency. The fellows, I love all these guys now. I'm going to tell you some things you might think I'm criticizing people, but they're all good friends, all right? I'm just trying to be a historian here. These are not personal things at all, but they were much less concerned about that than the BioChair directors were. They had some very definite ideas in mind about some radical changes that needed to be made. Many of them, by the way, which I agreed with entirely, they were very concerned about racial issues within the church. Remember, we're talking about the 60s. They were concerned about the role of women within the churches. These things way ahead, and a lot of people think these are new issues. They are not. We were dealing with all of those things, and the campus ministries were the place where those things were being discussed and where changes were being made, preparations were being made for changes, and so on. But we were a little worried when we heard these guys talking because we were pretty sure they were going to be controversial, and sure enough, they were, but they had these wonderful big meetings with thousands of people coming in a nice hotel in Dallas or somewhere. And again, we never had money to do those kind of things in the local BioChairs, but they were and great speakers and they did a lot to bring campus ministry to the forefront within the churches and so on. And they did a lot of good, but it was after a little while. Now, remember, we're talking about the 60s and all of the riots on campus and all of the issues. And so many of congregations of the Churches of Christ then were very much afraid, you know, that society was going to collapse. I mean, you kept reading the papers about all these riots and burning things down and all of that. And they did not want their students to be a part of that. And it was very hard for them to separate what we were trying to do with students, with the whole issue about how university students are not to be trusted. They're all revolutionaries, and they're going to cause us lots of trouble. So we were doing a balancing act, not only in attempting to move forward in the nature and practice of what churches did, which was could be controversial within itself, but how we related to all of that upheaval that was going on in society then. Those were very interesting days. And so the 11th of those big national meetings we had in Springfield, and I think we've got some people here today who may have been there in that meeting. We realized that not everybody was going to be able to have a Bible chair, but we still needed to do work with students on the campuses. And so we gradually tried to change the terminology. And instead of talking about Bible chair directors, we started saying campus ministers. And instead of calling the building the Bible chair, which is really kind of a strange thing to say about a building anyway, It's not a chair, it's a building. So we started calling them Christian Student Center or something like that. So the term, and our publication, which was one of the most widely circulated publications in the Churches of Christ. I bet you didn't know that. We were, I think we actually had published more copies often than Gospel Advocate did or the Firm Foundation or any of those papers. And it was called first the Bible Chair Journal, and then we changed the name to Campus Journal to try to say again that we have responsibility on the campuses whether we can have Bible chairs or not. Well, the thing grew. I know I spent a lot of time during the late 60s and into the 70s, had invitations, could have been gone pretty much every weekend to some campus where the churches wanted to, they wanted to do that, and they wanted to know how to do it, how to reach the students and all of those things. By 1970, there were Bible chairs or campus ministries on more than 80 campuses. There were over 5,000 students taking credit courses in Bible around the country. There were over 3,000 students who were active parts of their of campus ministries around the country and so on. Campus evangelism, unfortunately, ran into problems. Another way of saying that is the money got cut off because of some controversial things people said at the meetings and all that kind of thing. We had kind of predicted that. The old sort of stodgy Bible chair directors had said, you've got to be careful. We've got to bring people along with us here. And so it got to be very controversial, and unfortunately they had to dissolve. They asked me to come to Dallas. I remember it very well, meeting with everybody in a hotel room there, and they were crestfallen. They had had such tremendous plans for reaching the campuses and reaching people on the campuses, and they were not going to be able to do it. In the meantime, the Bible chairs that were much less flashy continued to do a lot of good. A lot of good. Some of it, I think, has not been well credited through the years. I know just in Springfield, Missouri, at the South National Church, in that decade, the decade of the 70s, I looked back to find some statistics. There were 276 baptisms. There were 176 restorations. Now, the younger ones of you don't know what that is, but the old folks know what a restoration is. And you can count that because that's somebody who used to be an active Christian who wasn't anymore. And when you got them to recommit themselves, that was called a restoration. And there were 176 of those. Then we had 533 people who were already Christians come and place their membership. It was almost 1,000 people, growth of 1,000 people in that university church during that that decade. By 1972, we had almost 700 students taking credit courses. I worked with campus ministry full-time until 1974, and then the university offered me a position in their new religious studies department, and that's when I made the shift. And that's important thing, not was important to me personally, but it's important to realize that what happened along about that time is the state universities decided that it was legal for them to teach Bible. And of course, that was a terrible development from the point of view of our campus ministries, because so many of them were based on the idea of offering credit courses. And all of a sudden, you couldn't do that anymore. And it also took your verse away from you. You know, it was much harder to apply what we were doing from Acts 19 and 9 than it was when we had the credit courses. But that was our problem. Anyway, and I'll come back to that in just a moment. Some of these names that I think have been much more important in the history of our movement than they've been often given credit for, because if they were not around the Christian colleges and you didn't see them on the in the lectureships in the Christian colleges and so on, you didn't often know what widespread influence some of these people had. I've mentioned Jim Beavis and Dwayne Evans and John Allen Chalk. Some of them, you may know their names because they were very noted speakers, but they're also very important in the campus ministry. Those people are important in campus evangelism. One of the most important people in that campus evangelism movement was not a member of the Church of Christ at all. That was Bill Bright, William Bright, who was the head of Campus Crusade, because that particular movement really drew its model from Campus Crusade. I'll say more about that in just a moment. In the Bible chairs, even less known people were people like John Moreland and Paul Phillips, Gordon Downing and Steve Eckstein, I mentioned, Roger Todd, Kenneth Reed, Bill Robinson. There may be a few of you who know these names, but they played a significant role in the relationship of the Churches of Christ to the university campus. Only one or two of them are even still living. Now, during the 60s, there were two concepts of how we should relate to students on secular campuses. And both of them had pretty much the same goals. Both had a goal of evangelism, although one of them stressed it considerably more than the other one. They both had the goal of spiritual growth, helping students to grow spiritually. They both, even though not a lot of talk was done, they both had in mind to be agents of change and renewal in the church. And they realized that when these Bible chair directors and campus ministers would get together, they realized that they had a great deal of influence over literally thousands and thousands of students who would be in positions, who would be elders and particularly not so many ministers, but lots of church leaders got all of their training, all their theological training from a Bible chair director somewhere. And we were very aware of that and aware of what a powerful agent for change that movement was and can be and could be, by the way. So we had the Bible chair concept, which said that the way you do those things that I just mentioned, evangelism and spiritual growth and change and renewal, the way you do that is through a discipline, through two things really, a disciplined study of the scriptures, disciplined study of the scriptures, academically viable. I'm not talking about a Bible class where we all sit and say, what that says to me is, I'm talking about where you had a trained teacher with graduate degrees who was teaching the same kind of thing the students would have been getting if they'd been at ACU or Harding or somewhere. And then secondly, body life. That is for the students to learn how to live in Christian community with each other. So there was an emphasis on study. There was an emphasis on the intellect. We were, after all, in universities that are about the mind. Evangelism did take place, and there were many baptisms in the Bible chairs. But it was mostly indirect. It was friendship evangelism. It was getting to know students who signed up for the courses. It was just getting to know students on campus and bringing them to the body life, bringing them into that group and so on. And so I think back on it, what we were doing is we were taking the model of the Christian college. We were doing what Christian colleges were saying they were doing. Giving people academic training in a context in which they were stronger Christians when they came out, but they were well-educated Christians when they came out. Now, the campus evangelism concept was different, though it had the same goals. And that was to bring change through encouraging strong personal piety and strong individual spiritual discipline. There was much more emphasis on submission to the guidance of the Holy Spirit, much more emphasis on the emotions than to the intellect. I went to many of these old CE meetings, and the thesis for evangelism in them was, the way you bring somebody else to Christ is you tell them your story. And what they would do, you'd go to you'd spend the first day of the meeting getting together your story. And then on the second day, they'd send you out on the campus. Now, this is totally against my personality in every possible way. I remember I went to one of them up at the University of Illinois, And I found myself on the sidewalk on the University of Illinois just stopping people coming by wanting to know if they wanted to know my spiritual story. And I just never did feel real good about that. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm just admitting that to you. It just kind of wasn't my style. But this is what they wanted to do. Of course, that's what the Campus Crusade, that was the theory of evangelism in the Campus Crusade, based on personal witness and so on. So the model institutions for campus evangelism tended to be things like Campus Crusade. Well, both movements, by the way, did bring change to the church. I read a very interesting essay by Mike Casey in which he had studied campus evangelism. He said many of the changes that have taken place in churches of Christ over the last generation can be traced almost directly to things that were said and done in the big seminars, the campus evangelism seminars during that period. And I know for a fact that many of the changes in leadership style and in focus and so on that you see in churches of Christ today came from students who sat in classes in the old Bible chairs. And that's where they got the orientation. So these things did happen. It's probably true that although both approaches changed a lot of individual lives and brought a lot of people to Christ and so on, that the harvest of the Bible chairs probably has withstood the test of time the best. You still find people all over the country who will attribute their own spiritual orientation to their Bible chair director, whatever. But they're both gone now. All right, and this is an important point to make in looking at the history of our relationship to the campus. The Bible chairs disappeared because the possibility of offering credit courses disappeared. And that's what was holding them together. And when all of the state attorneys general all over the country started saying, no, no, state universities can offer religion courses. They just can't offer, they can't give denominational propaganda, but they can offer them as an academic exercise. Well, that meant that the whole idea of bringing people in and studying the Bible in an organized way, that you couldn't do that anymore. You couldn't give credit for it anymore anyway. And so the Bible chairs had to change, and they changed into, and the term began to be campus ministry. You didn't hear about Bible chairs anymore. Campus evangelism disappeared because probably, and I don't want to sound too judgmental, but it probably ran too fast and looked around and had no constituency anymore. And it created, for some reason, in the brotherhood, it created fear at a time when the church was feeling threatened. It was a tumultuous time, generational conflict and so on. And somehow people got the idea that CE wasn't on our side somehow in those things. It is very interesting that campus evangelism movement sowed the seeds for what eventually became the International Churches of Christ. And I don't have time to get into all of this, but the some of the leaders in campus evangelism, the irony of that is that those people who led campus evangelism would probably be more uncomfortable with the way things developed, with what eventually became the International Church of Christ, than almost anybody else. And yet they really, in many ways, that is where the movement welled up, because it came up basically at the Crossroads Church down in Florida with Chuck Lucas. He was a very good friend of Claudette, my wife, and I. And Chuck was not a part of the Bible Chair movement and grabbed hold very quickly to this new campus evangelism idea, and then began to train young men and women who were then sent out, and a whole kind of third movement started that we could talk about at great length if time permitted as to how that all worked out. Now, in the meantime, this National Campus Ministers meeting continues today, and in a way, it represents the legacy of the old Bible Chair movement. So we sort of have the International Churches of Christ, and we have the National Campus Ministers meeting, and those, as far as being beyond local campus ministry, those are really the two expressions. Now I want to talk more about the 70s and 80s, and I guess I'll call this triumph and tragedy. because there was great momentum in the 70s. Thousands of students involved. Huge seminars going on. We started one in Springfield. It was just sponsored by our local campus ministry. We called it the Mid-America Mobilization Seminar. We had it at Howard Johnson's. And thousands of students, they came from, people came from Pepperdine. They drive thousands of miles there to come to it. And I can hardly go anywhere today that somebody doesn't stop me and say, I can't tell you how significant in my spiritual life coming to those meetings in Springfield were people that I didn't remember that they were even there. And it was a heady time. You know, we thought we were winning. And then when the Crossroads movement started, the attitude of the biochair directors and campus ministers was not hostile at all. I mean, we tended to look at those new ministries and say, wow, that's really great. They are reaching people. They're baptizing hundreds of people. We'd like to do like that too. And we began to talk with them. But gradually, the two movements separated. And it's too complicated to talk about right now as to just why they did, but a lot of it was because the Crossroads movement sort of looked at working together, meaning you do it like I do it or I don't work with you. And this was hard because biochair directors had to report to their local elders. They couldn't report to somebody in Florida or something. They had, you know, they had other kinds of pressures and constituencies, and they couldn't just do that. And I well remember the watershed. We had the National Campus Ministers meeting in Boulder, Colorado. And it was the first time that it had been sponsored by someone from the Crossroads movement. And there was not a single speaker or teacher in the entire movement that was not somebody from the Crossroads movement. So the Bible chair directors, some of them having been in campus ministry for 20, 25 years, were just sort of asked to sit and be told by one speaker after another, you have failed, you have failed. I doubt if you're really a Christian. Well, there started being these meetings out in the halls by the old timers saying, man, I know I have my weaknesses and everything, but boy, this is a downer. To just have your whole life and ministry characterized this way. And finally, I remember a discussion in the hall by some of these people. I already mentioned their names, saying, I'm not sure this is real practical for us to even be here. And from then on, they weren't. In other words, that became a split. Very unfortunate, because we were on the edge, I think, of having a huge impact on American higher education. And it fell on this particular, fell over this particular stumbling block. And what happened after that was a lot of local churches they finally said, you know, this campus ministry stuff is too much trouble. We had all that trouble with campus evangelism. Now we're having all this trouble with the Crossroads people. Let's just forget it and do something else, as there's not always some kind of a big turmoil about it. And during the period, the 80s, from, I don't know, if I could put years on it, maybe 83 to 87, dozens and dozens of these campus ministries just closed down. They just stopped. I'll tell you something that's that hurts me a great deal. That campus ministry in Springfield, which I remember with hundreds of students coming to our meetings and baptisms almost every day and hundreds of students in my class. I used to have classes of 250. The church there moved to the suburbs and sold the student center. And there's nothing. It's gone. It's just absolutely gone. And that happened in place after place after place. Just closed down. Now, I want to say a few things about how much time do I have?
We end at 3:15, 10 minutes.
Okay, all right. I want to say a few things about the challenge of the present. I talked to Scott Lambert. I talked to several people because, see, you soon get out of my where I'm not a personal witness to some things. So I talked to Scott Lambert, who couldn't be here today, but I want to give you a quote from him. He went to he was our campus minister here on this campus for many years. And he went to the National Campus Minister Seminar in 1987, and he said 1987 was the beginning of the modern seminar. That is the first time we just admitted we're not going to be able to work the Boston or Crossroad-related ministries and the sort of, whatever you want to call them, traditional ministries, unfortunately, are not going to be able to work together. Everybody just hates it and would do anything we could if we could, but we can't. And so he said, it was the first day, that meeting was the first day of my work in campus ministry. It was a devastated group. And it's so sad, 1987, after almost exactly 100 years of campus ministry in Churches of Christ, you've got 50 or 60 guys sitting around there saying, what can we do? We're being attacked from all sides. We have a sense of failure. And so they just had to start over again. They could not have credit courses. Both of the evangelistic methods, the one that was being used by campus evangelism and the one that was being used by the Boston movement, were not acceptable to the churches that these people were having to work with. So what can they do? And so you had that period in uncertainty. And there were leaders, and there were significant leaders. I mentioned some names of people who are still in campus ministry who just hung on in spite of everything. Milton Jones. I used to teach a graduate course in campus ministry at Abilene Christian in the summers. And I had Milton as a student. I had Ken Durham as a student. And I had all the leaders of the ICOC students in my classes. And one of the things we did, by the way, I spent a whole day every year with them having four or five of them to play the role of elders and one to play the role of a campus minister that wanted to introduce a change into the way things were being done. We just did that over and over and over again because I told them there's nothing else you could learn that'll be more valuable to you in this class than learning how to do that and keep your job and actually bring about change. So let's practice that. And let's look at it the way an elder looks at it, and let's look at it the way a campus minister looks at it. We did all of that kind of thing. But anyway, Milton was a part of that. Jim Brinkerhoff, who sadly died in 2013, a great leader. Steve Eckstein just hung on for years. Scott Lambert, that I've already mentioned. A very important person in campus ministry on the West Coast was Rick Rowland. Rick just never gave up. He's just constantly working on it. And Bob Shepherd in Texas is another one. These are people that have just hung on through all the thick and thin, through all the triumph and tragedy. They have hung on. But one of the reasons I admire them is because they were riding on a rudderless ship. And they'll tell you that. If you talk with them, they were really not quite sure, what to do. So here we are today. And the possibilities of campus ministry on state university campuses is as great as it's ever been before. But somebody's got to get their act together. The sense that the churches had in those days of needing to do this has almost totally disappeared. And the people who are willing to give their lives to it are confused about just what it is they need to do. One question in getting ready for this, I asked several campus ministers, I said, tell me how you would know if you were being successful. Now, that sounds like a simple question, doesn't it? I didn't get an answer from anybody, including people that I think are really smart. So, what if you count something, what do you count? And how do you know when you got more of it or less of it? I don't know. We've lost all of our objective ways of evaluating what we're doing. So now add this. The churches of Christ as a whole are suffering from disintegration and loss of consensus. And we kind of don't know as a movement the answer to that same question. So you really can't blame the campus ministers for not knowing, because you can ask most churches, even big, quote, successful churches, and about they can tell you we're successful because we're big. But beyond that, just what is it that constitutes success? It's a question that runs right through the whole movement, not just in the campus ministry. Add to that this much vaunted millennial lack of loyalty to brand. How many times have you heard that? And so you've got students who do not feel committed. Like Jim Brinkerhoff said in one discussion, he said, you know, we used to just announce something and said, at the Church of Christ, we're going to do this or that. And the students, if they were members of the Church of Christ, they just came. Well, it's amazing how little sense of loyalty to brand students have. Even if they've grown up in strong, dedicated, committed Christian families. So the campus ministers are having to deal with that, and that is a tough one. Secondly, we've got the predominant philosophy on the American campus is, I'm okay, you're okay. And do not judge, and if that's the way you feel, I won't criticize you, and I'll feel any way I choose, and you don't criticize me. Now, that's not a good context for evangelism, because evangelism is based, ever think about this? Evangelism is based on the idea that you're not okay. And so how can you have evangelism on a campus where the prevailing feeling is, I am okay, and don't you tell me I'm not? So I feel for these people that are trying to work in this kind of situation. And how do you train leaders for the church when you're not exactly sure what you mean when you say the church? Which church? And the student's probably going to say to you, and why church at all? Right. So you're dealing with that. Well, anyway, I don't want to get you so down that we just all kind of slide under the door leaving, but... We have tried to substitute, and I'd like to say more about this, but we have tried to substitute service. We say, well, you know, okay, we're in the phase now where what we do is we go build houses in Mexico, and we go and feed the homeless, and so, by the way, great, right in the spirit of Jesus, I'm not saying about that, but I think Jim Brinkerhoff, while he was still alive, said very, very well. He said, you know, yes, we do that. We try to live like Jesus. When are we going to get around to talking to people about what Jesus said?
Right.
So that one's a little bit harder to do. So we have some tremendous challenges. I just want to end this way by saying, and this has been a good exercise for me to think about some things I haven't thought about for a long time in trying to go back over this. I really think, even though there have been some tragedies, and there have been some false starts, and there's been some sliding back, and it's wonderful to talk about the good old days when everything seemed so good. But I think that I think the church once came alive about how important it is to train the next generation that's getting an education at UCLA or University of New Mexico or Purdue and so on. And I think that it could get that again. And I think we're bright enough people, and I think we have enough theological insight that we go back to the scriptures and to our experience in the past, and we can figure out what to do to make this work again. And the kinds of changes that took place in our movement in the 80s and 90s because of what students were doing in campus ministries in the 60s and 70s, I think that could happen again. So I'm not discouraged, at least right at this moment I'm not. Sometimes I get discouraged, but right at the moment I'm not, because I really think there's some great possibilities. Well, that's got to be the world's fastest review of the history of campus ministry. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, John. Our fourth and last class.